Hey, baby.
Hey.
Naomi and Andy here with a quick Q/request.
Yes. So, okay, Acast is doing these audience surveys, okay? We put the link in the show notes. The link is going to be in the link tree on our Instagram and everything like that. Here's the thing, Naomi. You know, we're already pretty choosy about the ads that we allow on the show. No weapons manufacturers.
Raytheon, get out of here.
Yeah. Screw off, Raytheon. But we want to make sure that the ads are kind of tailored to y'all.
Right.
Okay? Right? Say you want to hear ads for A Different World DVD box sets.
We need to know that.
We need
can
to
go
know
out
that.
To them. We can get the word out. But we only can get the word out if you give us the word. So you got to fill out the survey. It is quick, quick, quick. And it just lets us know if the ads you're hearing are the right ads for you.
Yeah.
So get on over to the show notes where that link is or the Couples Therapy link tree and fill out that quick survey so we can pass the word on to Acast.
All right. Roll it.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress. It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Open your hearts, loosen your butts. It's time for Couples Therapy!
Yeah, this podcast is Andy and Naomi's, where they can both laugh and hang with all their homies, talking excellent vacationing with brunches and cuddling, to messy situationships and conscious and coupling, from Netflix hookups to single them with some Hulu, text, sex, regrets, or feeling on your new jubu. They gon' talk about it, yeah, you are invited, needing therapy, I guarantee, baby, we got it.
It's Couples Therapy.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Couples Therapy. My name is Naomi.
My name is Andy.
And we're a real-life couple.
A real-life couple of comedians.
And on Couples Therapy, we answer a couple of different questions from a couple of different listeners. Coming to you on a Sunday fun day.
You would not have known from the excitement in my voice that just moments ago, I was asleep on the couch with Mabel draped over me. You would never have guessed.
I know. You've come alive. You're electric, even.
What a professional I am.
Oh, this is a fun episode. So I think that's what makes me a little energized, because I was like thinking back to the app and I was like, this is a real fun one.
This is a fun episode. We have a lot of fun episodes coming up. This has been a fun week. We, Naomi, you were in a Netflix movie.
Yes, I have a little part in a Netflix film called Me Time. And we did attend the premiere, if you will, the premiere. And we'll get into that in all its glory and opposite of glory on the Patreon.
Of glory. It was fun.
It was. But then we had that little end of the night incident. And so I will be bringing that to the page. I'll be bringing it to the page.
I forgot about that.
I have not. Because, you know, y'all, I like to hold on to a resentment. Okay, so you can go to patreon.com/couplestherapypod if you want to hear me ranting and raving in the next couple days. No presh, but $5 a month, you get 2 bonus episodes. And honey, I do spill tea.
By the way, hey, also, if you don't have $5 a month, you can rate and review the show for free.
That costs you nothing, takes 10 seconds.
That really does help.
It really does, because you get them ratings, you get those reviews. Obviously, only good ratings and only good reviews. Okay. It's like not where you want to put your anonymous feedback. Okay. But you get it there. That bumps us up. It gets us on the list, honey. We start charting. People know we exist. That's what it's all about, right? Just wanting people to know you exist. That's life in a nutshell.
But Naomi, how does it feel to be in a top 10 Netflix movie that's not The Gray Man?
It feels fine. I feel nothing. I feel nothing.
Hey, is that not modern life?
Exactly.
I feel nothing.
Wanting to be acknowledged and feeling nothing. Dark, dark, dark. We are goofing.
Hey, speaking of wanting to be acknowledged, we have some comments We have some updates.
Okay, we have to acknowledge.
I just want, because we have updates, I don't want to, we had a lot of comments.
Okay.
And a lot of things, but I don't think we have the time.
We don't. Not enough hours in the day.
But everyone, I want you to know, I listened to all of your comments from bow to stern. Okay?
From tip to tail.
So you are acknowledged. You do exist in the Cartesian sense. But very quickly, so do you remember Steph's episode, Autumn in Cleveland?
Yes.
Right? Do you remember she wrote in, her friends are all like booed up.
Yes.
And and she feels lonely in Cleveland. She's moved back in with her parents, right?
Yeah.
A number, more than one, a number of people have wrote in to say, hey, they also live in or around Cleveland.
Ooh.
And are lonely. So if Autumn, if you want me to connect you, we're not Hinge.
We're not a service. But this is about friendship.
Offering.
This is about friendship, and I will say that we have made a lot of beautiful friendships, Andy. The CTQC,
yes,
they visit each other across the country.
Yes,
they're crossing like country lines, even.
So,
okay,
Autumn, write in, you know, DM or whatever if you want, and I will connect you with these people that are also looking for friends in Cleveland.
Yeah, and you can like just have them, you know, you can just give us a social media handle if you want them to just like DM you that way, so you don't have to give out your personals. There are ways if you want.
Phone number and social security number.
Routing number.
Routing number.
Account number, routing number, social security number, phone number. We want numbers only, actually. If you just send us an email filled with numbers,
yes,
that would
be
good.
We are turning into a cult. That's what we're requiring from everyone. Another comment. This comes from Dave and Gareth's app.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you remember, I forget what the actual question was, but it was about, you know, someone's relative who's shitty. And we're just like, just don't talk to them anymore.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. The person, yes, her partner had a real shitty brother.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And we're like, you don't have to talk to them.
Yeah, get out of here.
You can minimize your interaction.
He's trash. You've done your time.
Hi, Naomi and Andy. I just listened to episode 216. The advice about the bad in-law hit me in the truth sector.
Mm.
I was struck by how all of you resoundingly, without hesitation, condemned the idea of tolerating this guy or having any relationship with him, be he an in-law or not. I've been needing to hear this for a very embarrassingly long time.
Mm.
Thanks for what you do and bring into this world. I enjoy so much. Your voices and personalities a great comfort.
Well, I love that. I also love when you choose the comments that are praising us. I love it. You're like, we can't read them all, but we're going to read the nice ones. But thank you. I love, first of all, love to hit someone in a truth sector. All right. I wonder where it is on your body. Is it your trunk? Is it your inner thigh?
I locate it like behind your sternum.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So you mean your heart?
Well, just in the middle. Not just where your heart is. Because isn't your heart a little bit over to the left or some shit like that?
Oh, yeah. Some shit like that. So angry. So resentful.
I thought apparently, because today, Sydney Sweeney is getting roasted online.
Uh-huh.
Her dad, she posted some pictures of her mom's birthday.
And
her dad's wearing like a Blue Lives Matter shirt.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, why are you hanging out with your dad?
I know. It's so funny. It was also her grandma's birthday. And so it's like so funny. And it was all like hoedown themed. I just thought the whole thing was hysterical.
Yeah, and I just love it. I love Andrew T. Whenever someone is like being not even racist online, but just like being adjacent to racist adjacent online, Andrew T. is there with like just like saying like, you don't have to talk to them. You don't have to you don't have to hang out with your relatives that are shitty, right? And it's just like, yeah, you can minimize as much as you can.
I will say my one thing though about that situation is I'm like, and I don't know her life, but I feel like you could not talk to somebody and still end up caught out in a picture with them.
Yes.
Like, it's grandma's 90th. Don't bring trouble to grandma, okay? She ain't got much time, so don't start fighting at a birthday. Just stand there and smile.
Yeah.
I could see that, too. But also, again, hysterical love it. Everyone being like, the fuck? Anyway, next comment.
I think that should be the lesson of Hollywood, is that you might end up in a picture with someone shitty, and you didn't mean to.
I've learned that. Already.
And we have an update from Steph's episode. Do you remember someone called in? They felt like they had been love bombed by a serial love bomber.
Yes.
A shitty member of their community,
mm-hmm.
but just a shitty member.
Right.
Not an illegal member.
Exactly. There's no like illegal action being taken.
We said, this person sucks. Forget about them. We would like to live in a world where people can commit revenge, but we don't think that's the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
Hi, Andy and Naomi. I am the caller from Steph's episode who was love bombed by a serial love bomber. Thank you for answering my question. Y'all basically gave the advice that I ended up doing, so good advice, which was to drop the whole issue of pursuing revenge against this serial love bomber, who is definitely a drug dealer at this point. Multiple people have now told me that he's a drug dealer. Basically, what happened here is that I'm new to the area that I live in, and so a lot of people had information that I just wasn't privy to yet, and strangely, dating him exposed me to more people, and then those people are my friends now, and those people told me, for the most part, that people are aware that he's a womanizer. He is not the mayor, nor is he on city council. I will not say what his business is, just in case someone else in my city listens to this podcast, just because it's pretty specific. But the thing that pisses me off about him the most is that where he's popular is the subset of liberal kind of 30s, 40s, millennial group of people in what is a pretty red state and red city. So he's like seen as this big ally, and then he's not. He treats women terribly, but it's a tale as old as time. Anyway, I thought about just like glitter bombing him. Like I was going to do stuff, have friends do stuff to him for a week just so he'd have like a really bad week in a low-key way. But I've dropped that too. And you know, he's trying to pursue me again, actually, but I'm just living my life, setting the boundaries, and thanks for answering my question. Thanks for your podcast. Love you. Bye.
Okay. Popular with this liberal crowd. Is it Beto O'Rourke? Do you think that's who it is? Also, just obsessed with whatever his businesses are. She won't mention them, but there's nothing I want to know more than what. Can you just please, like, write us privately? We won't. Just tell me what his businesses are. I'm obsessed.
It is fucked up. Yeah, what is he, like a mandolin repairman or something? Like, it is insane that, like, if you're a shitty person in a certain, like, subculture,
mm-hmm.
like, you own that subculture.
Yes.
Right? Whether it's indie rock. I remember, like, when I first got into indie rock and I was like, oh, finally, it's going to be like a bunch, like, we all like the same music. So everyone here is going to be progressive, and anti-racist, and feminist, and all that stuff. And it's like, nope. Nope. There's only a small amount of people that are, and there's a lot of creeps.
Yep. Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's where a lot of predators thrive, in those subcultures where they can kind of be top dog, where they can, you know, build up this reputation, honey.
That
they
should be
this.
The next Predator movie. Should be...
A comedy club booker.
Amber Midthunder, is that her name?
Yeah.
Going after, like comedy bookers and, like, indie rock stars.
Oh, God, like, gamer guys who are, like, big in that
big
world.
Big
Twitch streamers. Oh, my God.
Okay, Naomi, we have to get to today's episode.
We have to.
Who is our guest? Our old friend.
A dear friend, Henny. Just like Darkness, he's an old friend. Okay. The one, the only Matt Rogers. Come on now. You know Matt from his podcast, Las Culturistas.
Of course.
You can watch Matt in the movie Fire Island on Hulu on this Showtime show. I love that for you. Matt is out here bringing you a game serving. I love that for us. And you know what? I love that for you, the listener, because this is about to pop off.
Roll it. Do you ever think back in the days of sitting in the hallway at UCB?
Honestly, you couldn't really sit in that hallway because it was always wet. I mean, that's the issue about that hallway back there. I mean, there was like an area where you could go kind of hang out, and then there was an area back behind the stage that was always like soaking wet. Like it was always like... But also those spaces, like those old comedy spaces we used to perform in all the time, like that, I guess, was their charm, right? That there were exposed nails everywhere. There were health hazards. Part of the danger of the whole thing. It's like, you know what I'm saying.
If you did not walk away with wet jeans and tetanus, you were not doing comedy right.
No. And also reeking of whatever smell that was. And only it's like certain people that like performed in those comedy spaces know the smells I'm talking about. But like really what it can be boiled down to is like if you've ever been to like a basement theater and think, oh, there's that smell that these basement theaters all have. I'll tell you what it is. Decomposing rat.
That's just the truth. It's just the truth.
Oh, God, you're probably very right.
Well, I'll never forget when it was confirmed for me. I was at the Pit Underground, which was literally R.I.P. P.I.T. Underground.
Exactly.
But it was like, I was like, what is that smell? Like, and honestly, it was like, it wasn't even like a nasty smell. It was just a distinct smell. Yeah. And I asked like one of the interns there, and they were like, oh, that's rat. It's dead rat.
Now, in my mind, by the way, you are in overalls holding a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
Smashing through the wall to verify this. But no,
answers.
It's just, you're just taking someone at their word.
Well, I would know. Certainly, I'd never pick up a hammer in my life. And this is, I think, my third appearance on this podcast. You don't get that by now. I don't do any labor. No.
Andy's open. You know, Andy says, he says, I'm not going to put anyone in a box. Maybe Matt does take a hammer to things, you know? Whereas I would have said, Matt ain't touching no hammer.
No, I'm not touching no hammer. But the thing is, it goes beyond that for me. Like, I have license plates that I was supposed to put on my car, but that would require getting even a screwdriver. And so I'm not doing that. Like, I'll just, when it becomes a real problem, i.e., like the car is impounded or I'm in jail, then I'll deal with it. But until then, I'm not touching that screwdriver.
Now, does that also apply to cleaning, like chores and stuff in your own home?
Or everything. Actually, I just want to know, like, are you just like, I'll deal with the repercussions
later
when they come?
With cleaning, I try to keep it pretty tidy in here, but you can also tell when I'm not doing so great or when I have too much free time, like, shit starts to pile up. Like, actually, right after I get off with you guys, I'm going to... It's not dirty or filthy. It's always messy with me. It's always just like, oh, I didn't hang that shirt up, you know, that type of thing. But I don't allow things to get, like... dirty of cleanliness is not okay. If for me it's just clutter.
Yes, it's clutter. I am that same way. Andy had to, I think I've done pretty good. Andy's like, can you not put your clothes on the back of the dining room chairs?
Yeah.
He's well, like, that, can you not? And I was like,
oh yeah, actually you've gone, like, there was a point where it was getting really bad and I was getting really angry.
Yeah.
And then I don't know what changed, but
well, I heard you and I said it's not worth fighting over.
Open communication, we got there. It is different when you are dating someone though, right? I mean, like, it's like that whenever I've dated someone and they really allowed me to come over and see all their mess and stuff, I was like, oh, this is how I know it's gone too far down this road. It's like, I'm the kind of person where it's just like, if I can pull it off at one point when I do get into another relationship, like, and it gets serious, like, it's going to be separate bathrooms. Like, I don't want to see the person that I'm having sex with devolve in that way. Like, I can't be going to a shared toilet bowl and see what you're working with in that regard. Like, I can't. Like, I shut down in a major way.
Wow. Okay.
And maybe that's just me being immature, but, like, I don't like to share space that can get dirty in that way. And I, you know, was in the pandemic with a boyfriend for a certain amount of time, and it just got to the point where it was just like, oh, I know that the world is going to hell with the pandemic, but we can't be living in this much clothing on the ground. And I'm not saying I'm perfect, but, like, when you're in a relationship, you have to, like, I don't know, there has to be some sort of, like, you know,
you
decadence.
Want a little illusion, a little maintain.
Yeah, a little illusion. I actually think
a little. Yeah.
I think an illusion is good. I think an illusion it shows that you care.
Yeah.
So piss stains are your hard existential boundary.
I don't, like, yeah, piss stains, but, like, sometimes I had another ex-boyfriend who will remain nameless who often, like, okay, so there's flushing the toilet, which is, like, really flushing it, like, holding it down and making sure everything goes down. And then there's flushing the toilet, like, oh, yeah, I pressed the button down and then I left the thing. It's like, no, you have to make sure when you flush the toilet that everything goes down there because... If you don't, you're going to have to, say it with me, courtesy flush. And a lot of people out here are not giving the courtesy flush.
Sorry, stop. Hold on. Everyone shut the fuck
well,
up.
Well, the fact that you even need me to stop right now shows me what kind of person you are.
It is fucking insane to me. It is fucking insane. Sorry, hold on. People are not like
no. This one's like you would never know he was in the bathroom.
No.
People are not ashamed. Like I'm ashamed that I have a body at all. I'm ashamed that anything comes out of my body.
You're right.
From any part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the fact that other people are just like proud or indifferent.
It's like they don't. They're like what? They're very like everybody poops, and it's like
they're not thinking about
we
it.
Don't speak of it. Yeah.
No, they're not thinking about it. And my thing is just like, it's just like, I'll only say it one or two times too. Mm-hmm. It's like, hey, and then it's humiliating to come out of the bathroom and like be around someone that ostensibly you're supposed to have sex with and just be like, hey, I noticed some of your waste still in the toilet. If we could minimize that, that would be ideal for me and for you, I think, because I ain't engaging unless this is lickety split.
Exactly.
Sorry, help me, everyone.
What, Andy?
Sorry, for the listener, I'm smushing my fingers my eyes.
You can't take it.
Hoping to gouge them out so I never have to see this image in my head again. But what is the psychology behind someone who's just like, eh?
It's just but I flushed the toilet. You know what I mean? And then they're not going back to the toilet to check. You know what I mean? They flush the toilet, they leave the bathroom. That's it. They wash their hands, hopefully.
Hopefully. I'm gonna say hopefully, honey, because with that little half dab of the lever, that ain't nothing. That half dab, you know.
That's what I'm saying. It's a half dab of the lever instead of a prolonged one. Two, even three, and
you hear the pipe, okay? You hear the plumbing. You know when it's gone down.
Yeah.
And that's like a real, I think that happens a lot, or at least I notice in people who, when they were growing up, had their own bathroom. Mm-hmm. You know, like there was a people where it's like, oh, when they grew up, they had like a bathroom in their bedroom, and it's like the kids had their bathroom, you know?
Right.
So like, I think they're a little more predisposed to just do that because it didn't have the same like, let's check on what you're doing. Yeah. You know, but like my mom would yell at me if she came in that bathroom and saw anything because it was like our shared bathroom and it was not going to happen.
I also know that we're in the place now where it's a little bit more normal to just piss in a toilet and then leave it there because of water and everything. And like, but I don't do well with that either. Like, I don't like it when I go to the restroom and like it's like a dark yellow. Like, I'm just like. I don't know. Like, it just doesn't sit right with me. And I just don't like it. And it does stay in the bowl. But yes. I also know we need to be more cognizant. But I don't know. I'll reduce my emissions in other ways. Right. I'm flushing my toilet after I use the bathroom every time. I mean, I'm immovable there, I think.
Uh-huh.
How about this? One less flight on your private jet. Less flight on the Las Culturistas private jet a week, and you can flush the toilet every time.
What it's going to be is I'm going to take as many rides on the private jet. I'm just going to stop loading it out to my friends.
There you go.
There it is. You can take a 3-minute really, flight.
That's the Taylor Swift drama of it all. It's that, like, it's people are like, she flies every single day on her private jet. It's like, no, she doesn't. But what she's not thinking about is it belongs to her, and she allows other people to use it, like, for the majority of the year. So it's like the carbon emissions are ascribed to her since she owns the jet, but she's not actually using it every day, which doesn't matter. But, you know.
Also when she says other people use it, like, that's for money. Like, that's an income stream. Taylor's basically like, I'm going to buy a jet.
No, she's just lending it to people, apparently.
She just lended it. I refuse to believe Taylor did not say, you better pay me for my jet.
I think that she does lend it. I actually I know someone who it's been offered to.
Oh, my God.
I can never say who.
Well, Matt, this is a perfect pivot into your ascension. Because, you know, obviously, you know, because we talk about relationships and stuff here. And I'm curious as you become more well-known, more front-facing, are you having more people... Are you able to spot the fakers? Are you able to spot the people who are just trying to be close? Because I think that you are still, you always have been, but I think you still are. You're a very warm person, a friendly person. You know, like, you don't seem to have the walls up that someone might have who, you know.
Yeah, I think that my thing is, if I can spot them, I'm shocked at how much sometimes it doesn't matter to me. that's what I'll say. Like, if someone comes up and they're like a quote unquote, like, you know, not that I think of myself this way, but if they're a quote unquote, like, star fucker, or if they're someone who's like, you know, aware of me and like, you know, interested in that regard, it's like, Well, if I'm into it and they're into it, then I'm usually like, whatever. Like, let's it is what it is. But then sometimes I do think like, you know, I don't really know if I'm looking for the randomness of it all anymore. Like, I think I'm not really in that space. Right now, I'm sort of in an in-between place of, like, wanting to hook up for sure. But my new thing is, like, if I'm going to meet up with someone to just hook up with them, I do want to get a drink first. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
Like, just because I think that there's too much, like, weird gray area now between what people think and expect. And, yeah, maybe it is that, like, I have been out there a little bit more and I can spot it a little bit more. But it's just, like, I would like to get to know someone before I engage with them in that way just because I feel better about it and I think they feel better about it. Like, I would hate for someone to, you know, like, approach and say, like, hey, I really like what you do and I'm a fan, and then maybe say something flirty and then me take it the wrong way. There's just too many opportunities to take things the wrong way, I think, that it's just like, let's be really clear about what this is. Like, I'm not necessarily looking for anything either way. I'm looking to be surprised and delighted, and that I can usually figure out if that's going to happen, like, over drinks. But maybe, I don't know, maybe it's just me being more in my 30s now, but, like, I feel like I did the thing of, like, being on Grindr and being super random and, like, having my stories about, like, what happened when I did this. And now I'm just kind of like, if I can be in control of it, I would like to be in control of it.
Wait, what do you mean by super random?
I mean, like, random sex off Grindr. I mean, like,
come over now. I don't know anything about you.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Like, I've done that a ton. You know what I mean? Like, not a ton. I've probably hooked up on Grindr over 20 times, which is like, you know, inviting someone over who you don't know,
right,
with an aim to continue to not know them.
Right.
Uh-huh. You know what I mean? Like, and nowadays it's just like, I've never had like a terrible experience. Like, I have a friend who, like, one time invited someone over and then the guy ended up chasing him around his apartment with a knife. Like, for real. Like, I mean, there's horror stories.
Well, that's what I'm, you know, because I watch true crime, so I'm convinced. I'm like, they're all murderers. How do you do it? Like, I'd be much more like, hey, meet me in this coffee shop.
Yeah.
I'd be more like, more be like, we can have sex in a coffee shop bathroom than I would let you come to my house.
Yeah, no, but honestly, like, and people really do fake shit. I mean, they're like, people are really good at pretending to seem normal.
Uh-huh.
And then sometimes it doesn't even matter if they're normal or not, because you might just be that horny. And you might not be like thinking about it from that angle. Like, if they're a little weird, maybe you're into that night. You know what I'm saying? And so, like, it's like, whatever, he's a little weird, whatever. And then you invite him over and he's chasing you around your apartment naked with a knife. You know what I mean? Like, it can go there. So for me, I'm just like, I've had so many experiences that haven't been bad, but have been a little weird. Like, didn't expect that person to be a certain energy, or you just meet up with someone that you talked to and it was horny on the app, but then you meet them in real life and the chemistry's not there. I mean, I don't know. I like to take more responsibility with these things now.
Yes. 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 Yeah. You want to know what you're getting into, because I think that, to me, I mean, of course, you know, naturally I say repeatedly I'm sex negative. So, you know, it's not the same. It's not the same. But that feeling of like, how enjoyable can it be with a total stranger, kind of as you get older and start to have preferences and interests? Like, I think when you're 21, 22, like 25, you're like, I just want to hook up. Like, this is going to feel nice.
Yeah.
Whereas I think as you get older and start to be like, you're not doing it right. You don't know what's up.
I think the answer to that question, that is the reason why you have to decide to stop doing it, is because sometimes it can be pretty fucking good. I mean, actually, I think some of the best sex I've ever had has been with complete,
like, a rando.
Randos. Like, I remember, all right, this is taking it back, but I wasn't super sexually experienced when I was like, even 25, 26, 27. And I was dating my first boyfriend and we were sort of having problems in that area. And I think something that we tried was to be open. And that meant that for the very first time, I downloaded Grindr. And I had never used the app before. And I used it. And I had the most insane sex I'd ever had with someone who up to that point was not some I would ever, because I, you know, it's like when you're like growing up and you realize that you're gay, like in like a very like homogenized zone, and like you see certain film and television and it's like, this is the dream boy, you know what I mean? It's like this, like I used to think my type was like, you know, he's like a musician, and you know, like you know, my type is like, you know, he's a preppy boy, you know what I mean, like, and he's good to his mother. And then you like go on Grindr and someone talks to you like, here's what I want to do to you, and you're like, oh, okay. And then you engage with that person and you're like, oh no, that was so fucking incredible. Like, I liked the danger in that. And that's when you start to like realize like, oh, I don't even know myself sexually at all. But because I grew up in a environment where like I couldn't have like a messy first boyfriend in high school, you know what I mean? Like I wasn't exposed to a lot of like, you know, difference of, you know, sexual identity, of diversity, etc. Like, you don't know what you're into, what you like, whatever. And then you get to, you know, be in your mid-20s and you have the app Grindr in your hand. And it's like this, like, you know, menu of like possibility,
right?
And a you dive in world.
it is
giving
menu.
If only Alan Menken could write a song about Grindr, if only we could bring him back from the dead to like have him inspired in that way. But like, oh wait, Alan Menken, is he dead? No, I think he's alive. Who's the one that's dead? Howard Ashman. Anyway,
Menken, get on it then. If you're alive,
yeah, get on it.
If you're alive and listening to this.
But what I'm saying is just like, it's like actually what keeps you on the app is that you never know if it's gonna be good. And you know what I mean? It's like fish in a barrel. You might catch a big one, a big juicy one.
It's why I don't gamble.
It is a real gambling. It's a real gambling.
Because you could end up with American Psycho. You're like, I just want my ass eaten. And you end up with Patrick Bateman or whatever his name is.
Right. But the thing, too, about, like, just wanting your ass eaten is it's, like, sometimes, like for example, like, I don't know, especially during desperate times, like, during the pandemic, when it's like, oh, I've always had a thing with this person, but do I really want to engage with them in that way? And once I go down this road, like, they're a friend, I'm making them something that's not a friend. It's like, is that going to be weird? Like, so again, like yes, like everyone's like a base sexual person, and like unless you're sex negative and you declare it repeatedly on podcast. But I don't know, it's just interesting, like when you're all cooped up, like what decisions you make, or when you feel like you really are desperate for something. That's why I just, if I'm gonna make those decisions now, I do it with those close to me. And I ruin things I know I can rebuild because the person and I started off at a base point, you know what I mean?
Right.
Stranger, I know my close friends that I could fuck up relationships aren't gonna kill me. You know what I mean? I don't know these Grindr people aren't gonna kill me.
Right. Exactly.
Well, that answers my question from earlier about repercussions.
Yes.
And not worrying about them so much.
But he does.
No, yeah, I mean, yeah. I do.
Well, no, you're like, well, I can rebuild this.
I've been messy with my friend. I'm like any like modern gay man, I guess. Like, I have a group of gay friends, and like things get a little messy sometimes in that regard. Like, and especially during the pandemic, like, you know, it's like, it's a thing. Like, when you're in your pod with a certain people and you're like, well, I know I at least like these people. You know what I mean? Like, and certain things happen. But I guess my thing is, yeah, I'm not trying to randomize that part of my life in the way that I used to. And that's not to say, like, I meet someone that night and don't go home with them. That happens all the time. I just have drinks first, or get to know them first, or at least know what one of my friends thinks about them first. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I ask questions. I do my due diligence. And then I act like a hoe.
I mean, you're just joking, though, about, like, you know, oh, I can take these risks with my friends. But I was thinking, you are friends with a lot of your exes. Like, you're able to kind of go back to a friendship relationship. And was that always something you were good at?
I think it's more I just refuse to let people go and need things on my own terms. But what I like about, I guess, both my exes is both those relationships were based in friendship. And so by the time I realized with both of them that they weren't going in the direction that I think they needed to go, or we wanted different things, or I thought we'd be healthier apart, it felt silly to me to throw away the entire relationship period, point blank, just because we dated. And it takes a long time. And, you know, some people are not as amenable to continuing a relationship as others. But for me, it's just like, if I've opened my life up to you and I'm close to you, it means something. And if I can maintain that, I like to. But I also totally understand and respect people who are like scorched earth about the whole thing, who can't see the person that they dated. You know what I mean? Like, get it. It's just not who I am. Like, I don't know.
But wait, your friends, but I mean, do you literally hang out with them? Or are you just like, you know?
Yeah, they hang.
Well, Henry and I don't see each other as much anymore. This is my first boyfriend.
That was your first boyfriend?
Wait, Henry?
Was my first boyfriend, yeah. Henry.
Oh, wow, I had no idea.
That Henry?
Yes,
Henry.
Yes,
I'm miming playing a piano. I just wanted to make sure we were on the same page.
He's still my musical director for my shows. We talk a lot, like... I'm working with him this month, and we're going on tour together. We go on tour together every year. Like, we're doing 14 cities this December, so we're going to be together a whole lot. And we still speak a lot of the same languages, especially, like, comedically, artistically, musically. So it's great. I mean, we have this thing that I was actually really emotional when we broke up, because I felt like or after we broke up, looking back on the relationship, because I feel like everything in a relationship, like everything you try, like every emotion that you have, is just all pointed in the direction of, how do I figure out with this other person how to make each other better? You know what I mean? Like, this relationship, like of course there's great moments, there's not so great moments, but ultimately how are we making each other better, a better version of the other one? And in our work together, we really are able to do that. And I think that was something out of that relationship that I, like, truly, truly love. And so with he and I, and also we were just young, and with he and I, it's that. And with Jared, my second boyfriend, it's like, he and I are just such close friends, and we just care about each other so much and have such a similar sense of humor and interests that we really are able to intuit each other emotionally in a way. And then, you know, like, it's just so, when you get to be that vulnerable with someone, it's just hard, and it feels like, why are we gonna throw this away just because we want different things in life? Like, it's hard. I mean, like, and you know, there's slip ups. You know, I've certainly been the type of person to hook up with an ex. Like, I mean, I've done it. Like,
yeah.
I think that it's actually, like, you know, it's a thing, and I just try to judge myself a little bit less, because it's hard. You know, emotional shit is tough.
Yeah. I mean, but I think that is why people will scorch the earth, because it is like when you're like, okay, we are physically attracted to each other, then we do have this emotional foundation that you don't have with a lot of people just because of the time you spent. And so you're like, well, how do I just not continue to try to be in your bed? I think people who are like, so then they don't know. I mean, you were like this too, because, like, you would break up with somebody and get back together, and try to be friends. Yeah,
years after that, to the point where, like, it was just like, oh, I don't know if I'm ever gonna. I had to, like, stop it, because I'm like, I don't know if I'm ever gonna get over you if we don't stop hooking up.
Right, like, and that's.
Yeah, that's when the boundaries come in, and I think that's something that, especially from my perspective, like, a lot of people, a lot of gay men my age are just really not good at boundaries, and it's because I don't think there's been a lot of examples of boundaries put in front of us. Like, my generation of gay men, like, we didn't really have a lot of gay couples that were older than us to look up to be like, oh, that's an example of a healthy monogamous relationship. That's an example of a healthy open relationship. That's an example of a healthy single person. You know what I mean? Like, this is an example of a healthy group of gay friends who have history. You know what I mean? Like, it's just now I feel like almost like not a responsibility, but an opportunity to, as someone who's, like, a creator and a comedian and an actor, like, try to be a part of, like, showing what these things look like. I mean, like, being in the movie Fire Island, like, I honestly think that's one of the only times I've seen an honest, real-seeming group of gay friends in a movie that was like accessible to everyone, that wasn't like explaining away their existence or dumbing it down or making it seem like something that it wasn't. So I think that honestly, in representation, we can have like a healthier new generation come up, and maybe it'll be a little bit less messy or just less.
Less
feeling like you have to apologize for everything because none of us know what the fuck we're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Were there any examples when you were growing up of like, this is a gay relationship that like I want to pattern myself after, or like this feels right to me, like either in your
romantically in your... not romantically yeah. not sexually, no, there, because it was, I'll tell you what it was, and this is just the real truth, it was like when I was younger there was like Will and Grace, right? And it was like Will and Jack had a good friendship and they had a good platonic friendship between gay men, but all of Will's boyfriends like were played by straight actors, and he was a straight actor, straight Eric actor. McCormick, and it just felt like what was being said was, this is a gay relationship that we're not laughing at, because anything Jack was ever involved in was like probably with also another femme person, and we were more laughing at it, whereas like all of the Will relationships were like, when he comes to the door we shake hands and kiss on the cheek.
It was sexless. Like, it was all sexless.
Yeah, it was all sexless. And I have to say, like, the reason why we men are dating other men is to be fucking them. So like, let's not pretend this is a sexless thing. It's not. It's actually quite explicitly about sex. Yeah. So, and I guess that was hard to walk the line with, like, in a mainstream, like, you know, network television show at the time. But that is what we had. Mm-hmm. And so,
Will never ate anyone's ass?
I don't even think... I think that that would have been, like a different genre. It would, if they had even said the word ass, it would have been like, what? But I remember then there was, like, Queer as Folk. You know what I mean?
Which yes, gutter, they were having sex.
They certainly were, but like that was more like by the time as a young gay person you found Queer as Folk, you couldn't like pay attention to the storyline because essentially you were just watching like softcore. It was like so jarring to see sex like that on television that you couldn't focus on like what the characters were quote unquote going through.
Right.
Like
right.
All you could see was like an actual depiction of someone eating ass, and you were like, what do I do with this? Like, you know,
your eyes fucking out of your
keep
head.
Keep watching. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, I cut everyone a lot of slack for being like, for having like a second adolescence, like,
yeah,
because
yeah,
we didn't have a first one.
Well, it's, I mean,
but like in other, sorry, I just have to, like, there was no, like, I'm just trying to figure out, cause like I, these are all the kinds of, cultural touch points that I also had in the like, 90s.
I mean, were
2000s.
There a lot of interracial relationships you saw on television? Like probably one or two, like Boy Meets World.
Well, hello, we say Sean and Angela all the time.
And yeah, like, I mean, Sean and Angela, but like then
the Munsters.
Did you say the Munsters?
Yeah, yeah. He was a Frankenstein.
Girl,
she was a Dracula. Exactly.
Girl, Frankenstein, that's not a race.
But well, no, but it's so true. But it's also like, especially because I've been rewatching Will and Grace in particular, and like when we talk about like not only was it sexless, but yes, you were like NBC Thursday nights, but there was no shortage of Deborah Messon's ass in, you know, lingerie and bed with a guy. I was like, you never saw Will and her and a boyfriend in bed together. The way they would show her and a guy, like, and I don't mean having sex, but literally just like waking up and rolling over and having a kiss or doing whatever, and they never did that.
Did Frasier fuck?
Yes.
Yeah, he did. One time, Will and Jack woke up in bed together.
Yes.
And it was like a joke. And I don't even think they had sex. I think that it came.
No,
out
no, no.
That,
they
like,
fell
they
asleep.
Just passed out. They fell asleep.
They were on Karen's yacht. But when I tell you that was the end of the episode. The big break of the episode was, did something happen?
Did they have sex?
And then like the next episode, of course, the next one was like, well, absolutely not.
No, they did not.
They never could. No,
they should don't even have buttholes.
Exactly. And it was like, or like the moments when, but then it was also funny because again, that was a popular show, right? So I very much remember when Patrick Dempsey plays Will's boyfriend for like two episodes and his whole thing is that he's not out and he's like introduces Will as his brother. But I just remember being like, is this Patrick Dempsey trying to like change his image. You know what I mean? He's like, look, I could play gay, which means sitting with a man. Like, because they do not kiss. They like hug. When he comes to the door, he gives him a hug. And you're just like,
yeah, like his boyfriend that like went the distance was played by Bobby Cannavale.
Yep.
And his whole thing was that he was Vince, who was a firefighter, right?
A cop. He was a cop.
He was a cop. Yeah. I mean, like, how do you get more like not gay than Bobby Cannavale playing a guy named Vince, who's a cop who talks like Bobby Cannavale? You know what I mean? Right. And I was just like. And so, and at the time, though, it felt like, oh, but we do have representation. And so that's what I mean when I say I get to my mid-20s and I'm confused about myself sexually. It's because we've only ever seen acceptable depictions of gay relationships that aren't actually real.
Right.
Right.
And also white.
That's another thing. It's like nobody. White. To the point where, like, of course there's fetishization in the gay community, because there was no diversity growing up. There was no representation in terms of like a diverse relationship. Like, gay people are already so in their heads about so many different things, and then like all of a sudden you give them an app where they're allowed to say whatever the fuck they want, and of course some of these dark people like that are like so disgusting on the inside, like, and haven't dealt with their other issues, like, we'll say this disgusting stuff.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's a lot. I mean, the gay community has a long way to go, but for me personally, I'm taking it to drinks.
I guess the thing that I was curious about, though, is like, did you ever seek out other media outside of, like, because the mainstream media was so desperately homophobic? Right. Were there other places where you could search out and be like, oh, well, this is... In this movie that I found on whatever Criterion,
this German film
actually depicts like a real gay couple, and I'll can be kind honest of like with you,
no, because like that wasn't even in my head. All I wanted, well, you know what I really lacked was people with my sense of humor talking like me. That's what I wanted. I didn't really care about like looking to the future or like looking to the media and being like, but what's my husband gonna be like? I didn't think about it, because I just figured I'll never have one. What I wanted was friends I could be honest with. Like, what I wanted was, you know, to know what my sense of humor was and how to be able to use it. So honestly, what I would watch when my parents weren't in the house, I would go on HBO On Demand and I would watch Sex and the City. You know what I mean? Because I was told, it's like, here's women talking with each other the way you've never heard before. And I was like, all right, well, I'm interested in that. And then the jokes they'd make to each other and the way they'd talk about men and the way they'd have different perspectives on things, I was like, I can feel myself being a part of this conversation. You know what I mean? And I was interested in it. They were very aspirational. They lived in New York City. And also,
great apartments.
Not for nothing, but when they would have sex, it would look like sex.
Yeah.
At least what I thought of sex looking like at the time. You know what I mean?
And then
they would have sex on the show for real. They would show it. And then afterwards, they would talk about what it was like. You know what I mean? Like, for example, in the episode where the guy that Miranda's sleeping with wants her to eat his ass. And I had never heard of that before, rimming. I didn't know what that was. And then they had a discussion about it at brunch right afterwards. And I'll never forget that, because it was just like, wow, they really are having a discussion about this thing that I'm like uncomfortable with, but I'm seeing is a thing.
Right.
You know,
right.
So that was like formative for me in a way.
Cause weren't you, I was trying to think, cause you're a little bit younger than me. So you would have been early high school, late middle school.
Well, the Sex and the City show started in like the late 90s.
Yeah,
and
it was like
ended, I believe it ended in 2004. So that was when I was, if it's six seasons, then it's the years when I was 8 to 14.
Oh, wow. Okay. So very little.
And then the movie came out when I was in college.
So, yeah. Okay. So you watched
it. I was born in 1990.
You were a teenager. Oh my god, Andrew! We gotta stop the episode. Okay,
that reaction every time, like we didn't all know we were different ages.
But I no, but you know what it is for me, especially though, because I saw you perform around the same time. So for me, people I saw perform around the same time were all.
Oh yeah, the same age. We're all. Well, I feel like that way too. You know what I mean? I also started very young.
Right,
I was 19 when I started comedy because I was at NYU and I was sort of accelerated in that area. So probably we met when I was like 25.
Yeah. Yeah. But in my head, I was like, so we're all 37 doing our best. You know what I mean? Because we're all like start comedy.
I'm actually legally not allowed to ask you about eating ass.
Right.
Because of the age
gap.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, Andy, I think we've unpacked a lot and I think now people need Matt's help.
All right. We'll be right back.
I'm here to help.
After this.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Can we take a minute and talk about Skims? Now, you know I'm a recent Skims convert, having tried their underwear in the last few months, and I am now living lifted, supported, changed. So I decided to keep trying new stuff. And let me tell you, Skims basics and foundations are where it's at. Yes, I recently got the Soft Smoothing Seamless t-shirt. And y'all, it is so comfortable. It's been the perfect layer for me. I'm rocking it under a cardigan or a sweater when I want to keep it fitted and fabulous and not look all bulky. I mean, y'all know I'm back to work. Hashtag blessings. And I'm definitely that girl who is always cold in the office, okay? I need my layers, but I'm still trying to look put together. And the Soft Smoothing Seamless shirt is helping me get it right. And I also got the boyfriend t-shirt in heather gray, and it is so friggin' soft and comfortable, and it's giving casual but intentional when I wear it with a pair of jeans. I'm feeling very good in it. So if you want to give these and other basics a try, shop the Skims t-shirt shop at skims.com. Now available in sizes extra, extra small through 4X. Thank you for the range, Skims. If you haven't yet, be sure to let them know we sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select our show in the drop-down menu that follows. Again, that's skims.com. Go check out everything they've got and the new t-shirt shop.
Dear listeners, Andy here doing the ad read again, and today we're talking about MeUndies. As the male half of couples therapy, I was asked to do this one because we're talking about boxers, which, and I hope I'm not breaking any confidences, Naomi does not wear. Now, if you're a podcast listener like me, you've heard plenty of ads for MeUndies, and frankly, I had always thought it's underwear. How special can it be? And then I tried them, and friends, it is like wearing magic. It is like wearing a dream. It is so soft, there is nothing earthly I can compare it to. I am embarrassed, absolutely embarrassed to say I'm middle-aged and just finding this out, but the material your underwear is made out of really does make a difference. I won't say where I usually get my boxers from, but for comparison, MeUndies are like wearing a cloud covered in angel's feathers, and the other ones I wear are like wearing a bear trap smothered in puke. MeUndies got style for everyone, from all black classics to fun expressive prints in sizes extra small to 4XL. And they use sustainably sourced materials and work with partners that actually care for their workers. Also, I gotta point this out, there is a particular technology that the folks at MeUndies would like me to discuss. Now, you know Naomi is sex negative and I am sex neutral, so I didn't want to have to say what this technology is, so I asked friend of the show, friend in real life, Mort Burke, to say the phrase. So, okay, here it goes. For any listeners with penises and testicles, I can say medical words. You might be interested in MeUndies' sophisticated
contoured pouch and ball caddy.
What's that again, Mort? They're incredibly comfortable?
Contoured pouch and ball caddy.
Wonderful. Thanks, buddy. Okay, soft underwear comes in all packages at MeUndies. So to get 20% off your first order plus free shipping, go to MeUndies.com/therapy. That's MeUndies.com/therapy for 20% off plus free shipping. MeUndies, comfort from the outside in.
And we're back, honey, with Matt Rogers here to help you handle your scandal, honey. Matt comes to us with an open heart, okay?
I really
Matt comes to us as a leader in culture, in communication, and he's going to help us help you.
Well, speaking of communication, let's start off with this one. This is, a softball question that we could do.
To get us going.
Yeah, okay. Of this. Here we go.
Okay.
Hey, Naomi and Andy, it's William. I'm calling because I have a question about a new relationship that I've started, and I wanted to understand or at least get your advice on some tips or how to handle someone who maybe isn't the best communicator. So he is a doctor, and he has a lot of work and things like that, and I work it from home, so I have a lot more time, and I don't necessarily know what's too much of an expectation going into it. And what I can ask and what I can't, and kind of how to navigate that. So I'd love to hear, you know, how you've done that, and then maybe if you have any tips on how to do it moving forward of someone who's very needy like myself and wants constant attention, but also understands that that's not realistic. So I look forward to hopefully hearing from you, and I hope you have a great day. I love you both. Bye.
Wait, William, what'd you say? What'd you ask me?
Communication.
But I think that in you saying that actually is his answer. I think he needs to ask this question to his boyfriend. I think he needs to be like honest about this and just be like, hey, I noticed that we have different lifestyles. You're busy a lot. I'm kind of sitting around here. And I think that it just, because I work from home, I have a lot more time for this to occupy my space. So I do want to spend more time with you and like wonder when that will happen. But I feel a little self-conscious asking that because I really do like you and don't want to, you know, I think he just needs to literally ask the question he asked us to him. Like this is so much more simple. Like if the answer is how do you communicate better? Honestly, what is your actual issue? Ask him that. Period.
I'll say this too. I think Naomi, you hit on something as well. I think that was great, Matt. Where you're like, oh, what is the question? I think the caller is maybe not used to articulating himself. Or maybe
his needs.
Maybe he's nervous to talk to him. That's what it is. He actually knows what he wants to ask, but he's nervous to do it. Yes. And you can't be, because I honestly think like if this is going to be something that moves forward, you have to be able to express yourself and not worry about the type of response that you're going to get. Once you express yourself and you get a certain type of response, if that's one that doesn't sit right with you, then I think call into this podcast.
Right.
I am someone who gets nervous communicating with people. So I run through the stuff in my head a lot to figure out how I want to. And obviously, like, reality is not, when you start having conversations with actual human beings, they're not going to follow whatever the script is in your head. But so you have to, you know what, take an improv class, okay? That's what you got to do.
Oh, gross.
Do 101.
Gross. How dare you say that to someone?
I'm just kidding.
I also wonder, I wonder if there's a little bit of a thing with, like, this guy's a doctor. And
I was thinking to say.
I'm not sure what William does, but I wonder if there's a thing of, like, well, I don't want to interrupt his actually important stuff with, like, my petty thing, which is, why don't we spend more time together? But meanwhile, like, that's a real thing. I mean, time together is a major deal. It's a big currency in a relationship, right? Like, that's where the relationship happens in time together. So it might seem like you, in bringing this up to him, are being like unreasonable or demanding of his time, but like, it's your time too, and you're in the relationship too. Exactly. So I just think you can't be shy about being like, hey, I wish I could see you more, but I know how busy you are. I just wanted to tell you that and let you understand, like, I think it's occupying a little bit more space in my brain than maybe it is yours because you are busy doing this thing. Mm-hmm. But I would love to see you more, and I'm wondering how that can happen.
And I think, too, because the problem is the longer you withhold that stuff, because maybe you're withholding because, quote, you don't want to bother him, but you're actually not having the real relationship. You're having this, like, half relationship where you tiptoe trying to keep the doctor, where it's like, tell him what you want, and you will quickly find out whether he's your person or not. As you said, Matt, it's like when you get the answer, like, and that's what you need to know. Don't be afraid of losing him, and then as a result, not even like being real with him.
Right.
Yeah. And so you might as well just like tell him what it is. And I think too,
do you want a partner or a phantom?
Exactly. And like this, like, or like, okay, well, I think he's going to come over. Let me not bother him. And like, just, we'll do that. But I think too that, you know, a couple things to remember. One, like, you can ask somebody for something without being demanding, right? So much of this is in the delivery. So you saying, I wish I could see you more, does not have to become this histrionic, where are you? Do you like me?
Right.
And also the way you spoke, even just in this voicemail, like, you sound pretty, like, direct.
He seems like a sweet guy.
Yeah. I was like, you're not coming off like cray cray. So it's like, you know how to communicate in a direct way. I think also then the other thing too is like,
But that's what I was saying. I was kidding about the improv stuff, but I meant like run these things through in your head until you know what you want to say in the most articulate way so that you have it down so you can just say, hey, this is what I want. I'm not demanding it.
Mm-hmm.
This is just what I want. And so you know it. So you're not like flustered in the moment.
Yes. Okay, I see. No, I totally know what you're saying. But I also think it's my thing too with him is, oh, I know what it is too. It's like, this person who went to medical school and is now a doctor, you ain't the first person to tell him he was too busy.
Yeah, right.
So, like, what you're asking for is not wild. That's the other thing, too. It's like, this is not going to be an out-of-left-field question, concern conversation. So remember that, too. Don't think that, like, you're going to be the first guy who wanted something.
But the most important thing is that he says something, because this is also, it's early in the relationship and you don't want to set a tone for the relationship and for yourself where you're the person in the relationship who is not saying what they feel, because that means you're not being your full self. So this actually is a big test. And I actually think while we weren't able to answer your question about how to communicate, like, we're saying is basically just communicate. That's actually a big deal. And that is something I think to take from from the question being asked.
Yeah.
You must communicate.
Did you go to therapy? Are you somebody like...
I started therapy for myself this year, and it's been a huge deal. And like, actually, this is one of the things. Because I was having a really hard time with someone I was dating earlier in the year because I felt like things had changed, and I just wanted clarity on what it was. And I was like in tears all the time about like, you know, feeling like I wasn't good enough and how things had changed. And like, I was just confused. And my therapist said, you need to tell him how you feel. And I did. And my entire emotional life got better. Like, it was just, it's just about communicating, because you're never, ever, ever going to look back at being honest in the grand scheme in the long run and think, I shouldn't have been honest. Like, because in the immediate aftermath, like, what's the worst thing that can happen? Like, you say to this guy, hey, here's my concerns. And he said, he reacts really badly and is like, I don't think we can do this. Then you didn't want to be with that person.
Exactly. You saved everybody some time.
Yeah. Just being honest will always lead to a better situation in the long run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's uncomfortable, Matt, in the moment.
What prompted you to go into therapy now?
What prompted me to go into therapy was after I shot the series that I'm on, I knew it was coming out really, really soon, and it was going to be combined with the movie coming out, and I could feel that things were going to start getting very public, and I felt like I was going to be out there a lot, like, to be perceived, like, in this movie, in this show, out as myself, like, promoting it, and I wanted to make sure that I stayed, like, in a grounded spot, that I could just talk about the real things that I was feeling day to day instead of, like, you know, allowing myself to get caught up in, like, something stupid potentially. You know what I mean?
The glitz and glamour.
Yeah.
It's not, and the thing is, like, there really isn't a lot of glitz and glamour. It's more about, like, being really caught up in the type of attention you're getting from people. Someone who is, like, obsessed with, you know, I wanted to manage, like, the onlineness of it all, the accessibility to people's opinions. I just wanted to stay emotionally healthy. And so I had, like, threatened myself and my friends for years, like, I'm going to do it. I never did it. And I said, I'm going to go through enough of a life change right now where I think it's time. So
that's so smart.
It was good. It was good.
Yeah. Well, the reason why I asked that, too, even just when you're in therapy, is because, you know, Matt's one of those people who like gets along with his parents, you know, and they're like friends and stuff. So sometimes those people are like, I'm like, you kind of grew up in a healthy household where people loved you. So I didn't know if you even,
you know, what's funny? Like my therapist keeps sort of bringing up my parents in a way where she thinks like something is going to unlock and I'm going to like really want to go there. And I'm like, no, I'm kind of good in that area. Like, but it's so funny because like you can feel the therapist like wanting to take it there. And yeah. Like, of course you can always go there with your parents. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
Like, genuinely, like, I could be in therapy just for those relationships. Like, of course.
Yeah.
But, yeah. But I don't, it's not top of mind for me. Yeah. It's like, it's, yeah. And, but I can feel the therapist, like, because I think that probably that is the root of a lot of people's stuff.
Well, of
and
course,
maybe even
sure.
mine. But, like, but you can, I can feel her taking it there. And sometimes, like, I'm hesitant to go there because I'm like, I don't know that that's necessarily it. Then again, yeah. I don't know better yeah. than her. So,
I, you know. But you know better than her. Like, you know, I was going to say, is your therapist Teal Swan? Okay. Because Teal Swan is obsessed with everyone's parents being evil. Like, her whole thing is like, your parents hurt you. And people are like, okay, I guess that's what happened, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, for sure that is true, but it's just like, I wonder if it's like productive every single time to like harp on that, you know?
It's not. I think the thing though is that like all parent, you're going to have come away from like all parental relationships, no matter how good they are, with like small t traumas, just because you're yeah. different humans and they had authority over you for 2 decades
yeah.
or whatever.
Yeah, and right? when you so realize that they're not perfect and exactly. that they're human beings and they're fallible and they've made a ton of fallible decisions when it relates right. to you,
right.
like that is a mind fuck. And it's also, you know, there's a lot of stuff with them aging and then you becoming the responsible party. Oh, it's
yeah. I know, yeah. I know. But yeah, it's like, but it's also sometimes like, because I feel that way too, because I started with a new therapist a couple months ago where I'm like, we don't need to spend all this much time on my family, like my parents, just because, not only because I have done therapy in the past, but I'm like, it doesn't help me to talk about people who can't speak for themselves. You're just hearing my side of things. And it's like, we know they did their best. We know they did their best. Let's pivot. Let's deal with like the more present issue.
Well, yeah, but I think right. the thing in those cases is to figure out what the behaviors are that they created and then how to change those behaviors, right?
Yeah, how to change them. But like you don't, but as you said, how to change them, as opposed to just like, they did this to me.
Yes. Yes.
With ending there, it's not enough. Just right. to be like, oh, it's because of this thing that happened. It's like, no more wire hangers. And it's like, well, okay, what do we do now with that right. information?
Right.
Right.
Right. But that's the important part of the talk. Like,
yes.
No matter how good your relationship is with your parents, the point of talking about that stuff is to figure out what the dialectic is and then how to like, change it and how to like actively change
right
it.
But I do think it's funny though, because you know, like Matt, like when therapists are very much like, what did your mother do, what did mm-hmm. your mother say, you know what I mean, they're waiting mm-hmm. for that Freudian moment, and sometimes you're like, can we just actually talk about this friendship right now that is stressing me the fuck out?
Yeah, yeah. And then sometimes but. too, it's like, you know, there's something there and so you're like, I can't get into this right now, because that actually is when therapy is really hard. It's like, oh, dredge this up.
Oh, I like that. That's when I'm like, you're earning your money now. We're not yeah. just like, I'm just like, I didn't get this overall deal or whatever fucking shit people are talking about in this town.
Yeah.
You know, then it's like, oh, yes, finally, you are like, you know, you're using your Psy D for
yeah,
real.
To get in there. Oh, love a Psy D. I got a Psy D, but now I got to get somebody to give me the medicine. I want one person who does it all, quite frankly. Okay, I want an MD, PhD.
Same, 100%. Okay. A one-stop shop.
Exactly. Okay, who's this next one, Andy?
All right. Yeah, this is a little more difficult.
Hi, Andy and Naomi. Sorry, my biggest fear is like calling strangers on the phone, so gonna power through. I don't even know if I know what my question is. Basically, I'm started going back to school for nursing. I'm at a community college right now, so basically everyone in my class is like 19 or 20 years old, and I met this classmate of mine, just we would like study together and stuff, and basically like over the course of the semester, it became very clear that like she was in a really bad marriage and like her husband was like abusing her, and then in ways that we're both getting, like, the abuse was getting worse, and it was more clear, like, she was sharing more with me. And just because of, like, her situation, like, I don't know, she's just been through so much shit, but she's, like, very self-aware. She, like, knows, like, she knows the position she's in, and she honestly just, like, can't leave him right now. They have three kids. She's basically the only one who does any parenting, but she's also scared that if she leaves, she would lose custody of her kids, which, like, there's a whole story, too, but, like, there's honestly, like, a good chance she wouldn't have custody of her kids. But she's also told me, and this is, like, stuff I've invited to, but also, like, someone in that situation, they're very, like, desperate to share with people sometimes, especially someone who, in her case, she told me, like, she doesn't have many friends left. She's had to tell our professor a lot of these personal things, too, just to explain, like, why she couldn't come to class or something. And I'm just like, what, like, not what do I do in terms of fixing it, because I know I can't, but I'm like, how do I, like, live with knowing this and, like, being a friend when I'm really, like, a support person? Okay, love you guys. I don't know if that makes sense. Bye.
I thought this was interesting in the sense that it wasn't a typical, it's like, if someone you're friends with is going through something really fucked up, and you have no control, how do how do you emotionally deal with it? That's what I thought was the interesting question.
Yeah.
Those are really, really tough friendships to be in.
Yeah.
Because obviously you want to do everything you can, but it's just not your place.
Right.
Unfortunately, I think that this person has to get their own help. And that all that you can really do, caller, is keep being a friend. And, but I will say, you sound like you've really internalized a lot of it. And you have to check in with yourself that you are okay, because you sound extremely nervous and upset.
I know.
I would say to the caller, my advice to you is to maybe pursue, like, an outlet that you can talk about this and manage it and, like, see what it's bringing out in you. And I just, because it sounds like you're very upset about something that you clearly, like, care very much about. But ultimately, there is nothing you can do.
Right. Right.
I know you sound, because what I was thinking was, what I was getting from her is, like, she just sounded weary. Like, I was like, you sound broke down. Like, this thing has gotten you.
I mean, she did not sound good.
Right. It was just like, broke down by this whole thing. And so it's like, and I think that, and we've said this in the past, you know, when people talk about, you know, friends who are in these situations, like, because you can't control it, and you know that, but it's true. What you can be is a lifeline, so that when and if this person is ever ready, because especially you've said that she says she doesn't have a lot of friends, you know, you are a person then that she can go, hey, I'm ready to take some steps. Can you help me find those steps or reach out to people? Like, so you do want to keep that door open, but, you know, is it one of those things, like, for instance, are the nature of these conversations such where it's like you guys are studying and she brings it up in the middle of studying? Is it that you guys are talking and texting a lot outside of class? You know, kind of how is it coming out? Because I think that, you know, for instance, when you're, obviously she needs to get it out, she needs an outlet, but I think you can maybe try and put some boundaries on when she's letting it out for you. Like, for instance, like if y'all get together to study, it's like, okay, we just got to focus for 2 hours and, like, let's do the work we came here to do. And then maybe on the other side, it's like, okay, do you want to talk for a little bit? Do you want to talk for half an hour before you go back home or before you do whatever? But it can't be like, let's start studying, and then we spend the whole study session talking about the problem you're having.
I mean,
right? Like, it's that.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate that I think our caller has become, like, the sounding board for it, because really the person that they should be talking to about all this is, like, someone that does, like, have, like, specialty in this and can help them. And I think that that's what's hard about the situation, is it's like, this person is confiding and, like, even saying, like, you know, it's getting worse, you know, like, saying so many things, but, like, you know, the caller is not an expert like, right. And the caller is internalizing a lot of stress and like in a way internalizing some of the abuse, because it's like she doesn't have a healthy way of coping with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's just this whole dynamic is not healthy, and so you just wish that the person that's the victim of the abuse would be able to just leave, but it doesn't sound like they're currently ready to do that. So maybe one thing I could say that's actionable is just like if it's at a certain point in the conversation where it's getting really clear the person is like in a lot of danger, like maybe have some resources there at the ready that you can like pass along to them and be like, I've been thinking a lot about what you've been saying, and here are some resources. I'm sure you've looked into them already, but I want you to know that I think it's this bad.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I don't think it's normal.
Right.
But have either of you, by the way, Matt, for someone who just started therapy, you have the language and the conceptual stuff
sort
kinda,
of
like, down.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I'm very sensitive to when people all of a sudden are racked with emotion about something that is not their life. Like, this is not your life. And I understand that there's a lot of other people that you're going to class with that seem like they're not your age, and maybe you've connected with someone who's more your age, and you know, it feels good to make that connection. But the fact is, like, you can't save this person. Like, they have to help themselves. They have to save themselves. And I just was concerned in the tone of voice that I would have thought for sure the caller was going to say something was going on in her own life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, we have an empathy chain going on here, right?
Yeah.
Right. The caller is empathetic to her friend. We are all empathetic to the caller. So it's all like kind of transferring down.
Right.
But have either of you, because I think the core though is like, she knows this. I think she knows she can't really do anything. I like the idea that she should have like information at the ready, like here's a women's shelter that I know is a good shelter. Here's blah, 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 right? Whatever. Here's a phone number you can call. But when you have had friends who are going through difficult things and you're empathizing with them, right? Besides drawing boundaries or besides like giving them information, what have you done personally to kind of just recharged, or what have you done to like emotionally, I don't mean wall yourself off, it's not, well, like the cask of Amontillado in your brain, but it's like
this
what
is
have
another
you done?
Yeah, this is another reason why I started therapy though, because my boundaries with friends are often like not great, like, and sometimes I'll wake up and I'll be like, why am I upset? Oh, something that doesn't have to do with me. And I'll be like, or like I'll be very like I don't know. I'm very empathetic and like very much like a water sign in this way, where it's just like, if someone is upset, like I will take it on. And I've noticed that doesn't serve me at all and never will. And being there for a friend and listening is different than internalizing. And you do not have to internalize to be there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't. You really don't. In fact, like, the worst thing you can do is internalize so much that you then become another like weak pillar in that person's life. You know what I mean? Like that, like yeah. something that I think I would caution people against is like, you know, just being so available to the point where you then are feeling those feelings. If you're starting to feel that stress, then it might be time for you to take a step back. And maybe that sends a message. You know what I mean? Like, honestly, it could get to the point where it's just like, I am hearing what you are saying, and I want you to know it has bothered me so much to the point where I think about it a lot. And I think that what you need to do is you need to explore an option, which is talking to someone who can offer you real help, because I am getting to the point where not only am I unable to offer you help, but I'm feeling like dispirited and demoralized as a result of it, and I don't want to be that type of energy around you.
Yeah.
Like, it's okay to tell people that you're wearing down.
Yeah. Yeah. I was also thinking, too, because I think that's right, too, because especially what you said to her, like, I don't want to be that energy around you. Not like, you're really bumming me out. It's like,
no, it's just
I want to be here for you, and I can't be here for you feeling this way. And I think
like
that's
it's
a
hopeless.
Very nice way to put it. Exactly. But then also, too, one thing that she said in the call, too, is that she's even talked to their teacher, their professor, about this stuff.
Right.
Because she's like, hey, this is why I haven't come to class, et cetera, et cetera. You know, this is where, for instance, you're in nursing school right now. So you're around people who are predisposed to be helpers and people who want to do that kind of thing. Yes, there's no way there aren't resources at that school. And that meaning like just contacts with people, like, you know, especially community college where you are getting people who are like coming from different backgrounds and like lifestyles. Like some people, again, maybe 1920, some people got lives and jobs and, you know, families. So it's like there are maybe things there because, yes, there's this concern about having your kids. But
yeah, there's the custody concern.
But if you are being abused by somebody, they ain't giving that person kids.
You don't know that.
We don't know that definitely, but I think instead of saying like, well, I can't have my kids,
we don't know what the problem is.
But then she also said in the call, she also said in the call, she was like, but she would never lose her kids. Like she even said that in the call. She was like, she's worried about losing her kids, but she would also never lose her kids. Like she said that in the call. I don't know. To be honest with you, there is too much going on here that we don't know.
Right.
In order to give a real.
I know.
I think that all I can say to the caller who sounds really upset that this is something that she needs to now assess in how it's taking up space in her life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, it sucks because, like, I think the thing is when you hear stuff like that, your first thought is something like, but I care. You know, I'm not a sociopath. I care about it. But it's just like, okay, but, like, you have no control in the situation. You have no power.
None.
Right?
And you might make it worse.
Yeah.
Like, by offering some piece of advice or, like, some sort of action or being like, I'm coming there with you. Like, you may make it worse.
Yeah.
Right.
Because you're also hearing, while this is like a victim's perspective and like this is your friend's perspective, you still are only hearing one perspective and seeing one aspect of the situation. You could go over there and like, you know, like it could be an actual dangerous situation.
Right. This guy could have a fucking gun. Right.
Yeah. Exactly. It's I think it's just be a friend, be a responsible friend, be emotionally healthy yourself and be available to her when she wants to make a change.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is Al-Anon a possibility? Is that?
That's exactly what someone like this should be exploring. Yeah.
Possibly.
Just throwing that out there.
Yeah.
If it becomes a major issue. Like, I have friends in Al-Anon, and they say that it was, like, imperative to their rehabilitation emotionally because they did not understand how much they were shouldering and didn't understand that it wasn't normal
to be holding all that. Right. Okay, you know what, Matt? Quite honestly, you might be a third therapist. Or a couple's therapy, because you really are coming here with the real. You are being direct, and you are being very empathetic. But you're really coming here.
But I actually think things are often a lot more simple than we think. Like, it's like you have to go out into the world every day as a healthy, positive individual in order to be productive. So what can you do to make that happen? That affects other people too. You know what I mean? Like, but it might not be in the best interest of this girl to keep going there and being like, what happened now? You know what I mean? Like, it might not be in anyone's best interest.
Do you know what it is, Matt? It feels like if you're an empathetic person, that part of that is like, well, I have to be a martyr then.
It does not mean suffering alongside.
Right.
It does not.
But that's what I'm saying. But that is, I think that is part of that in people's heads. I know it's part, like, in my head, there's this thing where I'm just like, well, if I don't, like, this is the very dumbest version, right? But if it's like, I'm like trying to like write a script or something like that, and it's blazing hot and I can't think, but I'm like, if I turn on the air conditioner, I'm destroying the earth.
Oh God.
And then, well, this is the dumb little version, but my brain is just like, it's okay, Andy, you're to turn on the air conditioner for an hour while you type so that you can actually think. It's okay to do that. You don't have to be a martyr for every single thing.
Well, yeah, it's put your mask on before helping someone else. Yeah. They literally are out here like, put it on before you even help the baby. The baby will figure it out. Like, do you know what I mean? Like, it's always like, you will not live And then it don't matter.
But that's actually a great example. That's a great example of like, put the mask on before you can help your baby. Someone who's depending on you actually cannot be helped unless you are okay. Like, if you are not breathing, you cannot help someone else breathe. Like, and that's like a perfect analogy for this situation. It's like, you don't sound well, so you actually can't help like this.
Mm-hmm.
But my brain does this calculus where it's like, well, if you turn that on for an hour, you've just destroyed the earth, right? It's the same. I think I'm saying that there's that martyr complex that comes along with empathy sometimes.
Yeah.
And that it's very difficult. I think that's the difficult thing to overcome.
And also, the line between, as you said, like, I want to be there, but also I'm not, this is not for me to shoulder. Because I think it's easy, because you think like, well, if I put a boundary, does that make me an asshole?
Right, that's the thing.
That's what you're saying. Exactly.
It's like, am I a bad person
for saying
like, there is a limit to, I have no control over this. I am going to be here for you, but there is a limit to what I can personally deal
take
with.
Take in,
And I think that is a difficult, I think that's the psychologically difficult thing in these kinds of cases, because you're like, people don't want to think of themselves as bad people. And then they do this kind of like calculus in their head where they're like, well, if I'm not totally there for this person, then I'm a bad person and I don't want to be a bad person. So I will totally be there for this person, even if it hurts me.
Right.
Right. And I think that is one of the difficult thing to overcome in this. And also your own sense of powerlessness in these kinds of situations.
Right.
There it is.
There it is.
There it is. My goodness.
Damn.
He's a culturista and he's a therapista. And he's a therapista.
I enjoy therapy. You know what I mean? Like, I really like it. I'm going again tomorrow and I get excited about it, because even when I don't feel like I have something to talk about or something like I'm really emotionally wrecked up with, we always find something. You know what the thing about therapy is too? Like, sort of in this same vein, it's like, when you are in a conversation with a friend or someone that you have a relationship with outside of therapy, like, it's not just you in the conversation. With a therapist, it's kind of a space just for you.
Yes.
And it's someone reacting to what you're saying who is not weighing in and being like, oh my God, girl, yes. And this happened with me as well. Like, you know what I mean? It's like, then you don't have to spin off and like do that. Like, it's really important to look at yourself emotionally in a vacuum, because that's the only time you can get actual emotional exercise and actually understand how it is that you feel and why, is because you're not gauging someone else's response in terms of their experience. You know what I mean? Like,
not to say
like, go in and be a dick to your therapist, but like, it doesn't actually matter how they feel.
Yes.
About what you
said. Right.
You know?
Yeah, you're not being like, is this weird? You know, the way you talk to a friend to kind of be like, have you been in a similar situation? Or as you said, you go off on that conversation.
Right.
So I think, yeah, totally. No, you need it. We all need it. Everyone needs that time to like look within and get right and get honest.
I was the last person to sign up for it, truly. Like, out of everyone I knew, like, they were like, you need it. And I was like, okay, I hate that you say that to me, like, etc. But I did need it. You know what I mean? And now it's like, now the way I talk about it, I'm such an advocate for it. Like, I've been doing it since I was a child, but I'm not. But I wish I had.
Wait, why were you resistant earlier?
Why was I resistant earlier? Time. Not feeling like I wanted to date a therapist, not wanting to like have to like the person, or like, you know, I thought it was going to be a lot more difficult to find someone I liked, the relationship I liked, and like I did. I think honestly, just like, maybe I was a little bit subconsciously nervous about doing it. Maybe I didn't want to feel like I was alone with myself for that amount of time, which is crazy because I love to talk. But I think, time and anxiety about finding the right person.
Yeah. Well, also, you're just like, you just seem so mature to me now. You just really seem to have matured, you know?
Since last time we engaged?
I don't know. It's interesting, again, when you see somebody, you know somebody, or see them over years, right? Where it's like, I haven't been in it, but I've seen your response to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and even as you said, even from the beginning, when you talk about, you're like, I went through this time of just randoms and showing up, and now I want to have a conversation first.
Now I want to be
a little bit more. It just sounds like what it is I'm hearing just a general mindfulness. Like, you want to be a little more aware of what you're stepping into, whether that is a night with a random or suddenly becoming like going on a fucking publicity tour. It's like, what am I getting into?
I think too, it's just as you get a little bit older, like you're just so much more conscious of your time and how it's best spent. And lately, I actually am loving my time by myself. I think I was really busy like all throughout the year, and it's a very social thing what we do, and it's really like a lot relying on like appearing as like the type of person that people expect. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like I genuinely, something I talk about in therapy is when I'm being like myself, Matthew, and when I'm being like Matt Rogers, you know what I mean? And like doing the thing and being like, you know, always having something to say about this topic or that, you know what I mean? Like, I don't think so, honey. And like, you know what I mean? All this stuff and Matt and Bowen and you know what I mean? Like all these things, like, it's like, that is not who I am. At for real, you know what I mean? Like, and so it's interesting to like, you know, I don't know. It's just interesting. And it is why I got into therapy. It's just about balancing what people expect and what you expect of yourself and to be able to do versus what you're actually able to do and what your shortcomings are, what your anxieties actually are.
Or what you want to do. There's what people expect and what you actually want. And sometimes it's not at the same time.
And I also think sometimes when you are better with yourself, the character actually becomes clearer. You know what I mean? Like so from when I feel good, like being myself, Matthew, like I actually feel like Matt Rogers is better because it's like, you know what I mean? Like it's not everything, you know, like it's confusing sometimes.
Yeah. Well, what is the
not to act
between?
Like I'm fucking Hannah Montana, but when I'm, but any person who is a brand, like, and when like you, Naomi Ekperigin, like Annie Beckerman, like you guys put out there a certain image, and like when you do this podcast, you put out a certain image, and then when you turn the podcast off, there is probably a lot of the same stuff, but there's different stuff. There is stuff that you wouldn't share. There's stuff I wouldn't share.
Right,
and I think that also like, when you get success for being the person who shares, and when you become successful for being the transparent person and the person that we feel like we know, that can get to the place where, okay, maybe I'll start therapy now.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
I mean, our audience knows our hard boundaries. We're like, okay, there's going to be stuff we don't talk about there. But for you, like, what is the tension? What is that kind of space between Matt Rogers and Matthew that you are trying to navigate?
I think that like sometimes it can be hard to present as an extrovert so intensely because you need rest too. You know what I mean? Like extroverts and people who are like very out there and like, you know, present as a you know, outgoing, friendly, bubbly, energetic person, like you'd be surprised how tired you get. And I think something I didn't realize like over the past 6 months is how tired I was. Like I got so sick at the end of this big, big, big press tour that we did for, it was like, I love that. It was like, we shot I Love That For You. And then we premiered and promoted that. And then Fire Island came out and we were promoting that. And that was like a big press thing. Like we were really out there. And the whole time I'm still doing the podcast and doing some live shows, etc., to the point where like I finally over 4th of July week went to Fire Island just for vacation, which is not a relaxing time anyway.
Not chill.
And I like was partying every day, and then all of a sudden my body just completely shut down. I got really sick. And I was like, "You know what? I think my body is literally telling me, shut up."
Yeah.
And totally. I never say that to myself. And so now, honestly, for the rest of the summer, like I didn't go out last night. It was Saturday night. Like Friday night, Greta and I had a show. We went out to dinner afterwards. That was it. Like I'm okay just turning off. Yeah. And I feel like I used to think I could never turn off. Or people would like forget. Or to be disappointed or like whatever. But like it's totally okay. Like especially when like, you know, people really feel like they know you and have an idea of you. It's actually okay sometimes to feel like you're pulling back from that because you're not necessarily that all the time. Like,
right.
I don't know. It's just about like actually being responsible with your energy, which sometimes means turning it all the way down.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of where I'm at right now. Mm-hmm. And my therapist said to me, like I even said to my therapist, I was like, you know, this week there's nothing on my schedule, and I'm so excited about it. And she said, add nothing. She was like, that's my challenge to you. Add nothing. She was like, okay. If you're in a place where like you've worked really hard, like we, you do what we do. It's not like a 9-to-5 situation. I feel good right now. Like I was excited about a week off. She was like, don't you add one thing.
Yeah.
Because you need that. You need that. And everyone needs that. And that's, I guess, that relates me back to the second caller, is you sound so tired. You sound so tired and upset. Yeah. Like, I worry about you. Like, I as much as, like, we're worried about the person in question, like, you know, my response in listening to that voicemail was to be like, oh, my God, this girl doesn't sound good. Yeah. She sounds like she's having a real hard time.
Yeah. I'm also going to make sure to check in with you on Wednesday and be like, you still didn't add anything? You still didn't add anything? Because I could see you going 72 hours and then start itching a little bit. Like, shit, I got to do something.
I go two hours and start. I know. Like, there's a two-hour block of freedom here. And
I know.
With nothing, and I'm...
I used to be like that. I mean, you know, y'all know what it's like to live in New York when you're, like, on the hustle, on the grind. It's like, if you don't have five things in your schedule for any given day, it's like you failed.
Yeah.
And then you move to L.A., and that becomes, like, two things, but it's still there. You still feel an obligation to action.
Yes.
And so now it's just like, I'll be honest with you. Like, I look at that free time like something I have to have on my schedule. Like, I will sit here and watch old seasons of The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, and I'll be like, no, this was good. I needed this.
Wow. Right. That's your recharge. Wow. You needed to recharge.
Truly, Naomi, though.
Can I quick ask?
Yes, ask quick.
You, as your public persona, are weary, and you, as your private persona, are weary. So what is the tension for you?
Well, I think that has actually also been a, not fully conscious, but I think it's been something that has helped me. Because when I first started doing stand-up, it was not, oh, I'm so weary, I'm so old. My early stand-up was like, I went on a date with this man from Craigslist, and he out of his damn mind. Like, yeah. I was younger, but certainly it was about that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think as I also noticed, you know, I used to just carry so much shame around who I was as a person, being depressed, feeling like I was lazy, feeling like, oh, I ate too much, or all these kind of things. And I noticed that when I put it on stage, that's where the biggest laughs would come from.
Yeah.
And it was there. Nothing made me feel less shameful than putting it out there. Mm. So that's why I started to pivot to that, because it was almost like it was a weird self-help in a way. And so, but now it's just funny because it's like, in a way, I do have a persona that kind of helps. But then I also have to be mindful too, because I'm like, okay, I think I'm being too negative, or I'm acting 30 years older than I need to be acting right now. Like, there are times where I'll be like, why are you serving auntie? Like, these are your peers, you know? And I'll do
why
that.
Why are you serving auntie?
And I'll do that.
Great day for a special, by the way. Serving auntie.
Serving auntie.
And I'm like, what am I doing? You know what I mean? Like, I'll be like, you young people. It's like, okay, very much in the same generation.
Honestly, you know, all the time.
But it'll kind of help me sometimes. Like, I remember, you know, when I remember that time, like, we ran into someone, there was a neighbor, and she said, she was like, oh, Naomi, I saw you walking Mabel, and I was gonna say hi, but then I remembered in your half hour when you said, don't talk to me when I'm swanging, so I didn't. And in a way, that's helpful so to me. You know? And I'm like, and I saw Sudi Green recently too, where she goes, Naomi, I think about you saying don't talk to me when I'm swanging all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm like, and so on one hand, it's like, in a way, that helped me. So yes, people don't approach me in the morning. But I think I'm also like, well, I do want friends.
I know. That's the thing. And that's the thing too, is it's just like, yeah, when you present a very extroverted thing, sometimes people come up and it's like a little too familiar. And that's, I guess, why I also have to manage the whole thing of like, let me get to know you first, is because like when you're too available and you're literally too available, you can get into a dangerous spot. So yeah, I'm learning. I'm getting better at it. And honestly, like, I'm happy to be slowed down right now. And like, because my year is going to get very busy again. And right. So right now I can see a window in time where I can just like sit around and like, you know, hang.
Yeah, watch like the Real Housewives. Yeah,
exactly.
You need it. Yeah,
be
you
a
need
dummy.
It.
And I've also, like, one thing I am going to stop is I've given myself license over the past 3 or 4 days to, like, eat really bad. And that should stop, because it is a slippery slope. Because it's kind of giving early days of COVID in here. Like, I'm wearing the sweat. I'm wearing the same sweats. I'm watching the same reality show again and again and again. I'm eating bad. I'm like, okay, what did I got some free time, and it's like I'm in lockdown. It's like, yeah. I'm not. I'm free to go. And I should be. I should go.
Matt, we never left the early days of COVID.
Yeah, that's the problem.
We are living in that space.
And that's why I be taking naps every day. And that's not good. You know, I could be getting a lot more accomplished. So,
I'm on a nap now.
You've earned it, honey. You've done two podcasts back to back. It's the Lord's day.
So yeah, real taxing.
You take a nap.
Thank you.
Thank you, Matt.
Thank you guys for having me. I always love hanging.
You're the best. And I'm so glad that you are doing well. And you better just rest up this week. So help me, God.
Honestly, I'm going back to New York on Wednesday. And I'm going to the Chromatica Ball, Lady Gaga's concert on Thursday night. So no rest for the wicked.
Oh, my God. All right, you guys. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.